Welcome back, WNST, Taos of Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a baseball season, although it certainly feels like a draft week around here with all eyes on the aftermath of the Orlando Brown deal. You can find all that at Baltimore Positive. Luke and I have chatted at length and fought back and forth about the value of the 31st pick, as well as Peter King, Eric Edholm, John Eisenberg, Mike Tenier, a whole bunch of folks have talked draft with us. In addition to politics, we got all sorts of things going on at Baltimore Positive. Wise conversations, as we call them, and my wife and I actually curbsided. Luke, you ever ordered groceries online? I had never done that before last week. I did that from Wise Markets. It was seamless until we realized I forgot to order the milk.
Well, you can't forget that, especially for the cat.
Just have to go in and do it. You know, so my we curbsided, and then my wife's like, well, I forgot this, and I forgot that, and you didn't order this. And she went in the store and saw Rob, and it all worked out great. But ordering groceries online, like, it's not going to be the last time I do it. Let me just put it to you that way. It was very, very easy. Almost dangerously easy for me to order that dark chocolate. I'll say that.
Almost like the Orioles ending Oakland's 13-game winning streak, right? I mean, it was that easy.
It wasn't easy. No. You had to send John Means to the hill to do that. You needed, outstanding offense. Look, we knew it was going to be an ugly campaign. You've spent the weekend down at the ballpark. As much as football sort of on the mind, they are playing baseball, and things are happening, and there's a couple of guys really standing out. Means is one of them, for sure.
Yeah, and I say to you all the time, from the moment that Mike Elias arrived, and I mean, even before then, we know they were going to be rebuilding. I mean, they went into 2018 trying to win, and they lost 115 games. I mean, you're forced into that situation at that point. But I've said over and over, you look at the individuals, right? Because you know they're not going to win many games. You know that the win-loss column and the standings are going to look really ugly. But Sunday, the finale against Oakland, after losing the first two, and Jorge Lopez doesn't pitch well on Friday night, for whatever reason, they give Wade LeBlanc a start on Saturday night. You get a good day on Sunday. I mean, it starts with John Means pitching the 0.50 ERA as we're into the final week of April. You know, that's pretty good, especially considering he's gone up. He's faced some quality clubs over the first month of the season. Austin Hayes hits two home runs. And you know, my personal favorite flavor of the day was seeing the debut of Zach Lowther, someone who's not at the top of their prospect lists in the way that you look at DL Hall and Grayson Rodriguez on the pitching side, but someone who's been on the radar for a couple years. And I think with this pandemic and with no minor league season last year, a delayed start to the minor league season this year, Zach Lowther's in that group of prospects that I think is so interesting because he hasn't pitched above double A. So typically how Mike Elias and Sig Meidel have liked to operate since in their brief time here in Baltimore is guys to graduate from every level. But you didn't have a triple A season last year. You have a triple A season that's starting next month. Meanwhile, Zach Lowther, who doesn't have the way that you come to expect it in today's game, you know, he's throwing 92 in his inning of work on Sunday when the game had gotten out of hand and he got in there for the ninth inning for his debut. But throws 92, has a good curveball, solid changeup, and is known for being very deceptive. So his stuff plays up a little bit in that way. But he's a guy who's just been nothing but successful at every level from the time he was drafted in 2017. So he's one of those guys that I think is fascinating to see what has he done over the last 13 months from a development standpoint. I've used the term to you. I've kind of called it development by concentrate. Because you haven't had a 130-game minor league season, so these guys are working in a more specialized way. Yeah, you know, at the alternate site, they played some games. Yeah, they a few times a week over the last, you know, over the last month or so. But it's not the same as going out there and trying to win a game every night. So in a way, it kind of allows you to specialize a little bit. It allows you to focus in on certain areas of your development without having just the focus of, did you win or lose that night? How many minor league pitchers? I mean, go back decades now. So many guys pitched a certain way, and they had success at single A, and they had success at double A, and they had success at triple A. And they get to the majors, and you find out the way they pitch isn't going to work at the highest level. So with what they've been forced to do over the last year, using more of the technology, technology, using more high speed cameras and a little more focused development in what they do. It almost makes it more the field more of a laboratory as far as them trying things. And Zach Lowther talked about this a little bit. It kind of gives you an opportunity to fail a little bit and tweak things without having the pressure necessarily of, oh, his ERA is 4.9 at Norfolk. What's going on? Is this guy a bust? No, he's trying to work on things, and kind of gives you a more specialized environment to do that. Now, that said, once you flip the switch in the case of Zach Lowther now being in the major leagues, and he pitched fine on Sunday in an 8-1 ninth inning of zero pressure other than the pressure he puts on himself being in the majors for the first time. But being back in a competitive environment where you're playing real games that count for the first time since the end of 2019, I'm going to be interested to see how he or any other prospect for that matter fares. As far as Sunday goes, it's always fun when you see a guy make his major league debut who you think at least has a chance. You know, if things go well, I could see Zach Lowther being in the back half of their rotation and being that kind of guy for them. He's a maybe at the very least, and that sure beats seeing Wade LeBlanc start on Saturday night. That's
well,
for sure.
If you go through every Miguel Gonzalez and every Weihan Chen and guys that every Rodrigo Lopez that can come along and flash for a couple of two or three years, that potential's got to be there for these guys. And the other part of this is, and this isn't, I'm not trying to be flippant or disrespectful to them, but there are no expectations here. When they give a guy a chance and they bring him up and say, you're going to be you're debuting in the big leagues, you get the late night phone call that was well documented on Saturday night with this kid, and then getting in. And to your point, you still got to get three outs in the big leagues, right? So they call you in the game. Sure. You got to get your outs. To get to that point, even on the worst team in baseball, even in an organization with a bunch of young guys, there is a level of confidence that they are going to show in several guys like this, that when they take the bit and they get the three outs, they're going to get a second chance and a third chance. And that's what begat every Miguel Gonzalez and Weihan Chen and every other long chance guy that's given an opportunity that does well. Means is another great example of this, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you can speak of those guys or speak about the guy who's doing it right now at a really high level, who was an organizational arm. I mean, everyone forgets because at this point, and my goodness, if you were engaged at the end of the 2018 season, God bless you, because what a nightmare that was. He was called off his couch because the Orioles needed a pitcher at Fenway Park the final week of the season in 2018. I mean, he was an organizational arm who was done for the season. You know, was at AAA, didn't put up particularly good numbers there, went to Fenway Park, got knocked around a little bit, as you'd expect for a guy who I think hadn't pitched in 2 weeks other than a couple, throwing on the side a few times. And less than 3 years later, he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League to start the season. And, I know it was the Orioles, but he was an all-star 2 years ago. I mean, it's a great story. And he's a guy who is getting better. And I think that's one thing that Brandon Hyde talked about Sunday, what you've seen with Means. I mean, everyone talks about the changeup, right? That's his plus pitch. That's his swing and miss. You're starting to see him mix a few more breaking balls in there. We've seen the velocity over the last 2 years tick up a little bit more. He typically isn't going to sit in the mid 90s by any means, but he can touch. He can go there from time to time, but 92, 93, and can touch 95 on occasion. Great changeup, and the breaking ball is getting better. And you're seeing a guy who is getting more swings and misses, and he's not. Very few pitchers in this day and age do it, period. Unless you're Jacob deGrom and a couple other guys, he's not going to give you eight innings every time out, but he's a guy who's consistently giving you six and pitching into the seventh inning, and he's doing it at a high level, and he's getting strikeouts and he's missing bats and he's only giving up a run or two. Like I said, a 1.50 ERA with starts against the American League East and against an Oakland team that was red hot. That's saying something. And I think, it's really a great story. As you mentioned, I mean, it's great to hang all your hopes on Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall because they were first round picks and they have the high ceiling and they're young, they're high school draft picks. But if this thing's really going to work, they need a few more of those peripheral guys. It means was certainly that. Lowther's not, you know, Lowther's number, I think MLB.com had him as their number 11 prospect. So it's not as though he's been off the radar, but he's certainly not a slam dunk. And the point is, you can't just rely on your quote unquote slam dunks like Rutschman, Grayson Rodriguez, DL Hall. You're going to need some other guys to hit. You're going to need multiple guys to hit. And, you know, if Zach Lowther can come in and carve out the number four, number five spot in the rotation and be that guy for the next 5-6 years, and great, you know, that's only going to improve their chances. So it's always fun to see a guy like that debut. And, you know, we've seen, you know, certainly seen Dean Kramer have his ups and downs. Keegan Aiken, of course, had a really rough spring trying to kind of rediscover the command he showed last year when he pitched well at the major league level. But, you know, this is kind of the next wave. Lowther and maybe Mike Bauman later in the year, depending on Alex Wells' health, maybe him later in the year. So, you know, as time's moving on, you're hoping you're having fewer and fewer of the examples of Wade LeBlanc taking the hill or Jorge Lopez being in the rotation, and more starts going to these guys, not out of a default situation, but because they're doing enough down below to earn those opportunities. And then when they get those opportunities, they take advantage. I mean, that's how this works, right? It's not just something that happens overnight. It's a process, and they're not terribly far along into the process. Everyone wants it to go faster. God knows I do when I'm watching a 9-1 game on a Tuesday night.
7 on certain games, but right, somebody's got to pitch.
Sure. I mean, yeah, and that's why some of those veteran guys are around. I mean, that's why you sign Matt Harvey, and that's why Wade LeBlanc starts the year in Baltimore, and that's why Jorge Lopez, who's out of options, has a nice arm, but is pretty clearly a bullpen guy.
150 innings.
I mean, but that's there's a functionality that you need, right? Because to your point. Yeah, in a perfect world, you just hand the ball to 5 rookies and they go, right? And it's 1989 all over again. And, you know, Jeff Ballard winning 18 games or whatever. But more often than not, young guys are going to struggle.
Cologne.
Yeah, young guys are going to struggle. You know, young guys are going to have those issues. So from a functionality standpoint, from a just getting through the season, you need as many arms as possible. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Zach Lowther. You know, we'll see if he gets a start here this week, or if they kind of pick and choose their spots for him to get his feet wet a little bit more. But certainly he's the kind of guy who's going to be in the mix in that rotation over the next couple of years, and you hope he takes advantage of it.
You think the Yankees aren't the right spot maybe to give him a shot? You know, like, here come the Yankees. So this is interesting. And then there's West Coast over the weekend.
Yeah.
But there are a few days, 80 degrees. Dare I say my wife and I were even contemplating a visit to the old girl here.
Well, I was going to say 10 days ago. I mean, the sky was falling in the Bronx, not even 10 days ago, but 7 days ago. I mean, everyone was panicking, and then, oh yeah, you remind yourself it's April and they win a few games, and not saying they don't have their issues, but
Oakland hadn't lost in a month before they got here. Right?
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and Oakland started 0-6, if you recall. So it's April. And I don't say that to make an excuse for the Orioles. The Orioles are playing about how I expected. I thought they'd play a little bit better at home than they have to this point, but they've done about what I've expected them to do. Individuals like Ryan Mountcastle struggling, that's been disappointing, certainly. We can get into that. But from a team standpoint, this is about what you expect. But when you see Oakland go 0-6 and then win 13 in a row, and then it's like, okay, well, they're somewhere in between those two, right? When you see the Yankees struggling early in the season, the Bronx flips out, the New York media flips out, anyone who knows baseball, let it play out. You know, for me, and you, I would assume you probably agree with this, I've always said Memorial Day is kind of when the dust starts to settle and you kind of sort of feel like you know what most teams are. There's some exceptions here and there, but, you know, early on, you let it play out. And, you know, we've seen Padres Dodgers series over the last week that, you know, you've seen some different elements there. So it's fun.
I looked at the standings and I thought the Orioles were worse than they were, right? Like, I'm like, all right, they'll go 8-12 and they'll go 8-12 and they'll go 8-12 again. Yeah. They might mix a 10-10 and a 12-10 in, but they're probably going to be a lot of 8-12 and 6-12s over the course of the body of work. Shocking to me that nobody's been very good. There's no 18-3s and there's no 4-21s, you know, like it really is amazing how everybody's between 400 and 600 kind of sort of this early on, that there hasn't been anything weird other than 13 in a row. And DeGrom's been otherworldly. There's been good baseball stories, but not that the Padres are 20-4 and have a 6-game lead. It's not like that. It's early, but everybody's sort of treading right now a little bit.
Yeah, and I kind of like it that way. I mean, as much as we can all recall the, you know, the Tigers starting what 35-5 back in 84, and you know, to win the AL East by almost by Easter, it felt like, you know, looking at that schedule and everything, but. I kind of like the early season where you get Yankees fans panicking because, well, you know, they lose 12 of their first 21. What's going on there? It's the Yankees. Even though, you know, chances are they're going to be okay. Maybe they're not going to win 100, but I would assume they're still going to be there near the top, battling it out for the division and for the American League. But you know, I think it's fun to see, you know, some of these teams. Whether it's an Oakland that starts out really slow and then catches on fire, or you know, the one team you kind of point to, you know, the Dodgers, what they lost, they had two losses over their first 2 weeks or something like that, and they've come back to earth a little bit, but they're still pretty darn good now. You know, they're a team that's right around 10 games over 500 already. So
well, the Tatis is a bad guy thing, and Machado there.
Yeah, oh, the drama there. That's Yankees. It feels like it's Yankees Red Sox, right? I mean, it's that's fun. And as much as that's a West Coast thing, and you know, you miss out on some of those games. You know, you've seen some of those games. You know, the ESPN Sunday night game was Dodgers Padres, so that's been fun. And you mentioned it. I mean, Jacob DeGrom. I'm thinking over my lifetime and you know, what I really remember, you know, being someone who was born in 1983, I kind of remember 1990 on as far as what's vivid for me. Jacob DeGrom, the dominance that he's showing right now, it feels like it's as good as anything we've seen since Pedro circa 99, 2000. I mean, it's just, it's silly what he's doing right now. And it's fun to watch and it's incredible. And I mean, the story of the last few years has been the Mets not scoring any runs for him, and DeGrom's getting hits and knocking in runs himself. So as much as guys like me who are anti-pitchers hitting, he, you know, kind of throws it back in your face. It's been really fun to watch. But you know, as I mentioned, though, you know, while DeGrom and some other guys get some, you know, the attention around baseball, you know, John Means quietly pitching pretty darn well himself. But you know, it's been a fun start to the season overall in baseball. And you and I've, you know, we've sparred about this a lot, and we'll continue to spar about it. And there are elements that I agree or disagree with you about as far as the state of baseball, but there have been some fun elements to the start of this season, even if not necessarily a lot related to the Orioles, obviously, you know, kind of stating
last
where they are.
Last thing for you, because this is stay on topic with Mountcastle and what's really going on with the team, because you can veer off when the team stinks. Where do you fail and get kicked out of here? You know, at what point on the worst team in baseball do, and you're a prospect, do they say, you know, maybe we should be giving you at bats up here? I don't think it's now, but there comes a point where struggle begats, you have to go work on your game somewhere else. Against the Yankees is not the place to do it.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I mean, you look at Mountcastle, he drew a walk on Sunday. He did have a couple decent at bats on Sunday. Brandon Hyde was asked about it before the game Sunday morning. I think the big thing that we talked about with Mountcastle, I mean, he hit at every level of the minor leagues, but what didn't he do? He didn't draw a lot of walks, you know, plate discipline, you know, the defense was the major focus on him. Starts out as a shortstop, third base, left field, DH, first base.
Well, if you swing at bad pitches in the big leagues, you won't stay in the
big
leagues.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you're talking about someone who did not draw many walks in the minor leagues. And, you know, there's different ways of looking at that. You know, do pitchers pitch around you and you just, you know, they're not fine enough to be able to pitch around you and they make mistakes and you hammer them? You know, are pitchers not pitching around you and you're just feasting on triple-A pitching? But, you know, the fact that he didn't draw many walks, that was always the red flag for him beyond – where does he play defensively? I'm not down on Ryan Mountcastle thinking he's a bust, but he's won for his last 27 and he's striking out a more than you'd like to see. And he's only, I think he has what, 3 or 4 walks on the entire season. That's not great. And it's just very tough. And we talked about this for years when Adam Jones and Jonathan Scope were very early in their careers. You have to hit at such a high clip. If you're not going to draw walks, you have to hit at a very high rate to be a productive offensive player. That's just the way it works. I mean, your on-base percentage is really going to struggle. I mean, you know, you don't draw any walks and you only hit 270, you're looking at a 295, 300 on base percentage.
Dude, that's you're not going to draw a walk if you're swinging at balls.
Right. So that's the thing. I mean, the years that Adam Jones absolutely raked, it didn't matter that he only walked 25, 30 times a year because he hit at such a high level that he was productive enough. The years that, you know, that waned a little more, that's where he was not a bad player, but wasn't that big plus value player that he was in other years. So that's where Mountcastle is. And to answer your question, I think it's really, I think you have to try to be patient as much as possible. And you said that, and I agree with that. I think a lot of it really comes down to what are you seeing from him from a body language standpoint? What are you seeing from him from a prep standpoint, from a confidence standpoint? Is there a benefit to having him go back to the alternate site at Bowie for 12 days? And, you know, as I mentioned, kind of this development by concentrate and have him do some plate discipline related focus and instruction and, you know, doing sim game at bats and having him just track pitches, you know, things of that nature. If the answer is yes for that, then I'll hear it. At the same time, it's not as though he's taking at bats away from anyone else that deserves them. You know, this isn't him being Chris Davis blocking someone else.
Well, the question is whether you can work it out against the Yankees, yeah,
right,
or whether you're overmatched at this.
Well, and that's the thing. But I think if you're him and if you're Brandon Hyde and you're the organization, you say, hey, you know, we called you up in mid-August last year and you hit over 300. Now you looked at some of the peripherals, the batting average for balls in play suggested he hit into some luck last year. And you could even look over the last couple of weeks. I think he's hit four or five different balls to the wall at various stadiums. So he's, you know, he's hit some balls hard. So maybe he's had a little bit of tough luck, but again, chasing pitches, you know, expanding the zone, being a kind of a high miss kind of guy anyway, where you're going to strike out a good amount, even if you're going well, you know, that's tough. So I think you have to be patient. And you know, I've liked that, you know, on Sunday, Brandon Hyde played him at first base and had Mancini DH and you give Mountcastle a chance. He's not thinking about playing left field as much, which, you know, since the first week of the season when he's been out there, he's looked more comfortable. I mean, he looked like a disaster the first week, you know, with some misplays in the Bronx that we saw and at Camden Yards. But, you know, you just have to, I think, and this is where I do think Brandon Hyde, even though us in the media haven't been able to be up close to talk to him in person since 2019. I think he is someone who's been good in terms of knowing when to nurture young players, knowing when to give them a little bit of a kick in the tail, knowing when to put your arm around them or knowing when to call them out. So I think with Mountcastle, I don't know which type of player he is in that way, but I think it's one of those cases, as long as he's responding and still maintaining a certain level of confidence and putting in the work, and you're seeing a guy who isn't overly down on himself, I think you keep running him out there because he's someone who, even at the minor league in double A, triple A, he had some periods of time. If you go back and look, he had some 3-4 week periods where he didn't hit the ball and he looked bad. And then boom, he gets red hot and he rakes for 3 weeks. And all of a sudden he's one of the best hitters in the league. So, you know, if he's that kind of hitter, you have to assume, yeah, that you're probably going to see that at the major league level a little bit too. So it's disappointing because he's one of the few guys on this team where you say, yeah, he better be a piece for the future based on kind of where their system is positioned player wise. So when he's not hitting, yeah, it is going to be a little more disappointing. And if anyone's going to hit in that lineup, you want it to be him. You want it to be Austin Hayes, who hit two homers on Sunday and, you know, has been swinging the bat well since coming off the IL. So, you know, those are the guys you want to see have success. So in the meantime of losing these games, when they don't, when those individuals who you think are guys for the future aren't playing well, then yeah, it makes a tough season that much tougher than when some of those individuals you're hoping to see some success, they're not having it. But again, as I mentioned, talking about the Yankees and some other teams and other players around the league, it is still early, but you know, you hope, you know, to start seeing a little more consistent, better at bats, and then I think the results will come after that.
Plenty of Oriole baseball to be played before Thursday night when the Ravens get going in the draft. Full coverage of both out at Baltimore Positive. Luke Jones on the scene at Oriole Park eating hot dogs, chasing Ryan Mountcastle, as well as some bad pitches, and getting ready for picks 27 and 31. My thanks to State Fair. We're going to be back out doing our first socially distanced live outdoor event in a couple of weeks over at State Fair, beginning our Crab Cake Connoisseur Club tour. We're going to begin that over at Fadley's with Nancy Devine, as well as with our friends at Costas. I talked to Nick and Pete last week. I don't know if I'm going to get a crab cake. I know I'm going to be getting that crab bub Imperial stuffed inside the mushroom caps. I know. Man, Saturday night, I said to my wife, I'm like, God, I'm in a mood for some crabs. And I was thinking about like just going over and getting a half dozen. But you'll see me this week. There'll be crabs everywhere around here. State Fair will also be a part of that. They got a crab cake at Pizza John's now as well. We'll be going there, as well as Roost Chris and some other places as the crab cake tour begins shortly, as well as the Preakness around the corner as well. He is Luke. He is Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all those other places. You can always find me nasty at WNST.net. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, AM 1570, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.